Welcome to this podcast from Christchurch London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org.
Thank you, Chris, very much. Afternoon, everyone. Great to see you. Great to have John and Carol here and be able to introduce them to you. Just so you know, Andy mentioned he's taking a team out in the summer. The first part of that deal was the Woburnsea Academy, where they're going to spend most of their time. When John heard they were coming, he said, oh, how about taking a service at our church? Could you come and lead worship? And he said to me, would I be happy to ask Andy Tuck to preach? So I got out of my desk, went over to Andy Tuck's desk, towered above him. And I said, Andy, how do you fancy preaching in Kampala when you go to Kenya? And Andy's response was, yes, my international preaching career begins. So just wanted you to know we now have an international preacher as part of the church, and his name is Andy Tuck. Not to be outdone, I feel the need to tell you I also am going out later in the year and taking a small team. That just makes me feel better, even if it's of no interest to you. But more seriously, there's an increasing sense of connection with both John and Carol and their church. It's a joy to have them with us and a joy to be able to send teams out there as well. As Chris mentioned, a new series today, and this is going to take us from now right through until the beginning of September. So every Sunday over the summer, we'll be talking about Moses. And the reason that we've taken the story of Moses is because we think there's two key themes there that will really fit for us or work for us at present. It's the story, although we're calling it Moses and we follow his character through, it's actually really the story of the people of Israel as they start in Egypt. In Egypt, they're in captivity. The times are bad, as we shall see. And we will trace them from there right the way through the wilderness to the edge of the promised land. Once they're into the promised land, they are free and they're ready to bless the whole world. They're ready to do the things that they were made to do. And the two themes that we'll keep returning to are firstly this, that the Christian life is a journey. You don't, when you start following Jesus, you don't stand still, but you keep moving. You find that you start to change. You see things from new perspectives. You start to want to make new decisions and move in new ways as a result. And we see that with the people as they start in Egypt and they go on that journey. But the other principle, which is just as important, is that that journey is not something you do by yourself. And that should be a shock to all of us who are raised in our very individualized, self-orientated society where essentially every decision is made on this basis. How does it affect me? We're not used to asking, how does it affect us? But actually, this journey, the journey of the Christian faith, is meant to be lived in a family or in a community. And we'll keep coming back to this. It's not about me, it's about all of us and the journey that we're on together. And also, as Chris has mentioned, of course, we're on a journey at present. As we've recently decided from the beginning of January, and Chris has mentioned this, we're going to be meeting in four locations. Just a reminder, if you need it, or maybe for the first time, go through that, 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock Sunday morning, south of the river. 11 o'clock here at the Mermaid. 4:30-ish, still deciding on those for afternoon times, 4:30 in the West End, 6 o'clock in the East End. The idea is that firstly, those central services we think are very, very important. Cultural renewal is a big part of who we are. It's a big part of our mission. And we don't think there is a better place in this country to be involved in the renewal of culture than right in the center of this city. And we think that it's great to have people working in the center of the city, but if they're going to work and live their lives and build community there, they should also worship there wherever possible. So the service here on a Sunday morning and the service in Covent Garden in the afternoon are going to be a critical part of that, giving ourselves to the renewal of culture. And we also understand there's a whole load of people who will only ever come to faith if they meet worshiping Christians in the center of the city. And so that's what those two services are particularly about. In the south and in the east, they will be focused on building community, engaged in their local communities, but with also an eye on other communities. We did our first Explore event for the South a couple of weeks ago now. So we're in Stockwell at Platonus College. And I'm thinking, man, from here, there's a whole load of other places we can start services. I mean, we can start in Elephant and Castle. We can start in Camberwell. We can start in Loughborough Junction. We can start in Brixton. And we can start in Clapham North. And that's just from Stockwell. And so we can do the same in the East and so on and so forth. And we trust that over time, that there'll be an entire reconfiguration of what Christchurch London looks like. Strong services in the centre of the city, providing resources, working for social, cultural and spiritual renewal, as we indeed are all over, and others in other parts working with their localities and looking to start the next service in the next place and the next place. And the listen, we, as you know, London's a big place and that'll keep us going for some time. I did say to the morning service, don't make other plans. We've got a lot to do and we're going to keep us busy for some time. So that is, if you like, the background to this series. To give you a bit of context for the story of Moses, the people, it was then, in fact, Jacob's family moved to Egypt when Joseph is around. And you can read about that in the second half of Genesis. But that now is some generations ago. The people have flourished and they've grown. In fact, in Exodus chapter 1, it tells us that the people now filled Egypt. And of course, as we all know, if there's too much demographic change, if there's too many different peoples coming to another nation too quickly, it makes people uneasy. And we're told in Exodus chapter 1 that the Egyptians are uneasy because they've got the Hebrews right around them in the center of the nation and they're nervous. If someone attacks them externally, then the Hebrews might rise up and they might be caught in a pincer movement. So the Egyptians decided this. They decided this was project get rid of the Hebrews. Plan number one, just work them like mad. Turn them into like this work project. And so they did. But we're told they kept prospering and growing. Plan number two, make higher demands and give them lower levels of resources to do it. Still didn't work. Goal number three, or project number three, Pharaoh stood up and simply said, all right, none of this other stuff is working. We'll be clear and we'll be brutal. We will take every Hebrew boy that is born and we will throw him into the Nile. And he said, that way, within a generation, we will have wiped out the Hebrew people. So these are dark and difficult days for the people of God. And when we get to read Exodus chapter 2, which we'll do in a few minutes, we'll find that within this very dark landscape, there are just some glimmers of hope. Now we're reading this story from 4,000 years later. So when we look back, we know history works like this. There are times where God's people, the church, is in decline. There are times where people are leaving faith. There are times where it seems that other ideas are bigger or better or at least in the ascendancy. But as you watch the centuries roll on, you also see that century by century, there's then an opposite move. That something happens. That God seems to be at work. Babies are born. Babies become adults who start to lead. And say, no, it can't stay like this. There must be change. And so there's spiritual life and renaissance. And that is exactly what we see in the story of Moses. And this chapter that we're going to look at is all about how he is prepared for that leadership in these dark days. And I hope that it will provide us with some lessons as well as we prepare for our launch into four services in different locations. And looking around the congregation today, with a few exceptions, including myself, most of you here are definitely in the preparation stage of life. Many of you are. But actually, we all continue to prepare, however old we are, for the next stage of life. So I trust this will be a benefit to us all. We're going to read from Exodus chapter 2. Words are going to come up behind me. Says this, now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. And then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the banks of the Nile. and his sister stood at the distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then the sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" I can't escape the irony of the fact we're reading this on Father's Day. And here we've got a daughter whose father, Pharaoh, has said, "Kill all the Hebrew boys," who's just ignoring dad because she's found a beautiful baby. And she just says, "We've got to care for him." And that's exactly what happens. Verse 8, "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him, and when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." What have we just read here? It says a woman, and we're later told that Moses' mother's name is Jacobod, that this woman has a baby, and his name is Moses. And we're told that after 3 months, she can no longer hide him. One assumes he's simply making too much noise when he cries. And so she makes a plan, and in that plan, she forms a basket, and actually the word for that basket is the same as the words used earlier in the book of Genesis for the ark. And this idea is she puts the basket into the water. It's like Noah trusting God for protection in the ark. She makes an ark for her son and puts him in the water. And then we're told that Pharaoh's daughter comes along and she's going to bathe in the river. And one of her attendants hears this crying baby. Moses is using his lungs. And they open up the basket and they find this baby. And at this point in time, Moses' mother has been smart. She's left her daughter to watch over the baby to see what happens. Moses' sister is even smarter because when she sees Pharaoh's daughter interested in the baby, she rushes over and she says, "Would you like me to find a witness for the baby?" Pharaoh's daughter says, "That's so kind of you. Thank you so much." She rushes off to get her mother. And her mother comes back and says, "I would be happy to nurse the boy. And Pharaoh's daughter says, "Not only will you nurse him, but I will pay you for it." So this wonderful irony here, that Moses' mother not only gets her son back, but she gets to be paid to be his mother. And then after a while, once we're told he is grown up, she gives him back to Pharaoh's daughter, and he goes to live in Pharaoh's palace. It's an extraordinary story, but one with a number of pointers which I think will help us wherever we are in life and whatever it is that we're preparing for. The first lesson that I want to draw from this passage is simply this. We're all given gifts, and they're given in order to serve God or to glorify God. We're all given gifts, but they're not yours. They're given to glorify another. It was an amazing feeling the first time that I held one of my children in my arms. His name was Edward. He was that tall. He is now that tall. But as I held him in my arms, I was aware, firstly, it felt like he's mine. I've never had one of these before. This belongs to me. But at the same time, and in an opposite sense, I looked at him and I thought, and he's not mine. He's other than me. I just get to care for him for a while. One day he will not be mine. I am a steward of his. And actually, it's the same for all of us with our gifts. They're given to us, but we're just stewards of them. There's a very interesting phrase in verse 2 of Exodus chapter 2 where it says that Moses' mother looks at him and that she sees he is a fine child. Now, that word fine child is an echo of the beginning of Genesis where God takes something out of nothing, creates the world for his glory, and then says, "It is fine." It's the same word. It is good. And so the writer here is deliberately echoing back in order to say that as Moses' mother looks at him, she sees that something has come out of nothing. It's a desperate, it's a nothing situation. That something comes out of that and he's made for God's glory. She knows that this is just a gift for a while. In the same way, the New Testament reminds us that we've all been given gifts. But none of us here can actually say, I've not got anything to contribute. Come up behind me, there'll be a slide with the main passages in the New Testament that talk about the gifts that that God gives to us. And you may want to just make a note of them or do a quick screenshot or whatever you want in order to look at them later. They're not, in my opinion, exhaustive lists, but they do give us an idea of the sort of gifts that God gives us. Let me just take, if you like, or let me just give you a random sample. The gift of hospitality. And the gift of hospitality is for those of us that love welcoming people and making them feel at home. If you have the gift of hospitality, I would encourage you to think about joining the welcome team. Or the gift of administration. The gift of administration is the organizing of things. If you have the gift of administration, I'd encourage you to think about joining the production team. There's the gift of leadership, of taking people somewhere. There's the gift of helps, of delighting in serving and assisting others. There's the gift of mercy, compassion and care for those that need it, and many other gifts as well. Some of those gifts are given particularly to help build the church. Others of those gifts are given particularly to serve the world. In the second year of Christ Church London, we actually met just over the river in Vinopolis. Vinopolis is actually a wine museum, but we didn't meet amongst the wine. There was some entertaining space there, which worked for us at the time. And it was the first time we put lights up for church. I've been leading churches for a long time, many years. I've never set up lights before. And I remember on the second week, I walked past somebody. I was there early. And I walked past someone. He was up a ladder doing things with lights. I looked up at him and said, "Are you okay, Paul?" And he looked down at me. He said, "I'm doing great." He said, "Lights and church." He said, "That's what I'm made to do." Well, I had no idea there was anyone in the world who was made to do lights and church, but evidently Paul was, and I for one was thrilled that he did. And then there's others, though, and their gifts are given to serve the world. And there's been members of Christ Church London this week who've been speaking in the media, who've been doing work over ideas, either in policy or in academia. There's been members of Christ Church London who've been loving their neighbours or serving in their local communities or caring for those who have less than they have. And they've been using their gifts to serve this city and to make this city a better place. So for some of us, at least, we'll be thinking, well, how do I know what my gifts are? And I want to give you just three questions, just to remind you. Just to give you sort of, you can do a brief checklist. And some of you would have never done this. All of us should do this from time to time. We change, we grow, we develop, our context changes. These are helpful ways of thinking about things. Question number one, what do you love doing? What would you do even if you weren't paid for it? You're just like, this just gives me its own sense of reward. What do you love doing? Secondly, what are you good at? And that's important too. It's no good saying, I've got the gift of encouragement, when actually everybody leaves you feeling absolutely miserable. It's got to actually work. So what do you love doing? What are you good at? And thirdly, what do others say? What do your friends say? None of us have got a perfect read on ourselves. It's one of the reasons we need community. It's one of the reasons that we have each other and we have connect groups and we start services where we have smaller crowds who can get to know one another. And true community involves being able to tell the truth to one another, loving, gently, kind, truthfully. And being able to say, listen, you're fabulous at that. But you may want to take a pass at that. Or you may want to ask somebody else to do that because they're fabulous at that as well. So we're all given gifts, and they're all given for God's service, but also I want to suggest that every gift that we have comes with a dream attached to it. Every gift that we have comes with a dream as to how we are to use the gift. I think when Moses' mother looks and sees he's a fine child, he's been given by God, she immediately thinks, well, it's obvious why. Because of this dark, difficult, oppressive circumstance which they're in. And my appeal to you is do not just think about your gifts in a vacuum. Do not just think about your gifts and your self-advancement, but think about your gifts in the light of the spiritual needs of the place that you live, your community, your city, and your nation. I want to suggest that there's some great needs that this city has right now. I think this city will be a whole load better off with loads of churches that are known for what they are for rather than what they're against. I think this city will be a whole load better off with churches that give seekers enough space and enough time to not only ask the big questions of life, but actually work them out. Now, who knows, that takes a while. Who knows, for most of us, answering the big questions of life is not something we do in 24 hours. Even the brightest of us. It's more complex than that because it requires personal change as well. So one of the questions I ask is, how can I use my gifts for that sort of church? How can I use my gifts in such a way that demonstrates that the spiritual life, which starts in there, in your heart, doesn't turn me inwards? Have you noticed the top sports teams, how they huddle before a match and they all turn in, arms like this? And for some people, that's their perception of church. For some people say that's what the life, spiritual life does. It just, everyone has a nice time in here, but not out there. No, actually what it should do, and you've seen these top teams, when the other team come onto the pitch, they turn outwards. And this city needs to see churches that are fueled by spiritual life, but which turns us outwards to serve our city. What we often call the spiritual, social, and cultural renewal of the city. One other thing, which I think we need to consider as we're thinking about our gifts, another element of the church, is that I think we need churches that don't just talk about what head knowledge. Now, what you think is important, but it's not enough. It's truncated. It's insubstantial by itself. We also need churches that say it's not just important what you think, but it's important what you've experienced. And that's where the Holy Spirit comes in. Because when you have the Holy Spirit prevalent in the church, people feel the love of God poured out in their hearts. They find this is a relationship, and it's who you love and what you do and how you follow, as well as what you believe. And you find there's power, there's energy, there's courage, there's all sorts of things that happen in there that work out there. So I want to suggest, I think this city will be a whole lot better off. Churches that are known for what they're for, not what they're against. Churches that are known for working out there, fueled by spiritual life, and churches which are known for the experience of God as well as the knowledge of God. And I want to ask you to consider using your gifts as you work them out for those sorts of churches and that sort of service in society. So we're all given gifts there to serve others. Second thing I want to suggest from this story is this story tells us we need to take care of our gifts. And if we don't, we can lose them. Pharaoh's mother would have been super aware of this. She's got her baby, but any minute that baby could be taken from her and thrown into the Nile. She knows if she doesn't care for her gift, she is going to lose it. Now, I think Christians get really confused on this one. You talk to them sometimes, you say, take care of your gifts. And they say, I couldn't possibly do that. That sounds selfish. I mean, surely I'm meant to be thinking about others. Yes, you are. But when you remember that your gifts are to serve others, then actually it is selfish not to think about them. If your gifts are given for the betterment of others and the glory of God, then you are failing to love others and you're failing to love God if you ignore your gifts. We're to take care of them. Here's what Moses' mother did to take care of her gift. Firstly, she refused to be intimidated. How many of us would be intimidated when the whole power of the state was focused on us and said, this is what is going to happen? And that's what she had, the whole of the Egyptian state saying, we're taking your baby. How many people would just sort of roll over then and say, well, okay, I don't like it, but there's nothing I can do. And you simply become fatalistic as a result. Here's what the writer to the Hebrews said. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months. And then at the end of the verse, it says, they were not afraid of the king's edict. My observation would be many people never get to use their gifts because at some level they just feel intimidated. I remember the first thing we ever did for Christ Church London in this city. I showed a photo of it a couple of weeks ago. It was a sort of lunch and a meeting we did in the Strand at a hotel there. And we were actually living in Birmingham at the time. We'd driven down, one of our first London lessons. Never imagine you can park just around the corner from where you want to go. And we find that we can't do that. And I've got to drive miles, or it feels like miles, into Covent Garden in order to find somewhere to park. I get out the car. I start walking towards the venue. And as I do so, I start to look at the buildings and the height of the buildings and the number of people. And you can feel the energy in the place. And I'm thinking, what on earth am I doing? I'm thinking, Stroud, what on earth makes you think that your gifts can be used in a place with buildings that seem to go almost to the sky and with people who look so much smarter and savvy than you do? And that's how I was feeling. And I remember saying to myself then, David, if there is one day you cannot afford to lose the battle of whether you use your gifts or not, it's today. You've got people coming from all over the place to hear you. So it was a battle. Now, I just say that just to let you know we all have these battles. What is it that intimidates you? What is it that will stop you utilizing your gifts and using them in the right way? Moses' mother said, I will not be intimidated. She said, I'll be fearless. But secondly, she then took action. She had a plan. Well, sort of. I mean, her plan was take a baby and put him in the Nile and run off and hope for the best. And you may say, well, that's not much of a plan. No, but it's better than nothing. Here's the thing with your gifts. The worst thing you can do with your gifts is nothing. Anything is better than nothing. Here's why. Because when you do something, you never know what else might happen as a result. And this is what happens with Moses' mother. She just puts the baby in the river. She has no idea that Pharaoh's daughter's going to come along and take a liking to him. But she's done something, and therefore something else happens. So I want to appeal to you. Use your gifts. When Paul writes to the young pastor at Ephesus, whose name is Timothy, Paul's left Timothy in charge of a really big church. It's very good for young people to have lots of responsibility before they feel ready for it, incidentally. Timothy, he writes to Timothy and he says this. He says, Timothy, I can't remember the words. Man, I was doing so well. Is it up here? There we go. For this reason, he says, I remind you to fan into flame the gift that is within you. Now, the idea there is do something. And sometimes, have you ever felt like, well, I used to have this gift that used to work fine, but now it feels like I've not got anything? I used to feel strong in this area. Now I just feel sort of impotent. Well, when you start doing, then you'll find that actually the gift is still there. But often the Spirit starts to be present as well. Listen, this isn't in the Bible, actually. It's a quote from Mark Twain. But he said, when you're in a sailboat and there's no wind, start rowing. Well, Mark Twain understood something about the importance of action. I want to encourage you. Use your gifts. Get going. Even if it's sort of a bit of a half plan, like Moses' mother, it really doesn't matter. And the third thing that she did, I think, is that she prayed. I mean, in fact, in the story, she tells her daughter to go and stand and watch. And as I read that, I was reminded of those New Testament phrases, watch and pray, watch and pray. And I want to suggest that the third thing that is important in terms of using our gifts is actually to pray about them. To pray, you can ask God for more. Did you know that? And he likes that prayer. It's not selfish. It's not like I hear people say something I couldn't possibly ask. He's God. I'll take whatever he gives me. Well, here's what the Apostle Paul writes to the Corinthians. He says, follow away the way of love and eagerly desire spiritual gifts. In other words, go after them. And so we can pray and say, could you give me this or could you give me that in order that I can serve others. I want to suggest right thinking, right acting, and right praying. That combination are powerful. But just remember, it's not that combination of things at once. As we said the other week, it's habits that change us, not single actions. So when we get into a habit of right thinking, of right action, and right prayer, then you find it builds a momentum with the way that you use your gifts. And so you're increasingly able to serve others as a result. So we've all got gifts. But we have to, and we all need to take care of our gifts. And thirdly, the third lesson is this, that we need to find the right place to grow in our gifts. We need to find the right place to grow in our gifts. Moses gets taken into Pharaoh's court. That does not appear to be the right place. If you were Moses' mother, how would you feel when you are watching your son getting taken into the nerve center of the oppression of your people? That's not like, yeah. That's like, he will forget us. He will never understand the issues of justice that matter so much to us. I will never, you know, he will learn a different language, etc., etc. Now, I understand for a lot of us, you're saying, well, no big deal, because you read the story backwards. In other words, you know what happens. Well, Moses' mother had no idea what happens. What happens is that later Moses has to go to Pharaoh, and he has to tell Pharaoh these things are going to happen. Now, of course, most of us would back out if we were told, oh, tomorrow, could you pop down to number 10 and have a word with David Cameron? You'd be like, I do not know the protocol. I don't know how to get to him. And I haven't got the sense of self-confidence anyway. Not the case with Moses. He's like, I know the court. It was my home. I mean, he probably knew the doorman by name. You know, hi, Charlie. You know, let him in. And he stands in front of Pharaoh and he knows exactly what to do. He knows exactly what to say and exactly how to handle it. And so you look back and you say, actually, he was in exactly the right place. What's the lesson here? The lesson is this. You may feel that you're in exactly the wrong place at the moment for the development of your gifts. But very often, or always, God knows better. I think back to my first 10 years of ministry. And for most of those 10 years, I wanted to be in another place. I simply didn't understand that some of the people around me were pouring knowledge and helping my character and developing skills that I would have not probably gained, or I wouldn't have gained anywhere else, some outstanding people. I didn't understand that what was a lot more important than where I was the people that I was with and what they could teach me. And I look back and I think I was in exactly the right place. I want to encourage you, if you find yourself in a place and it doesn't seem to fit, give yourself. For you don't know what is ahead. But of course, your Heavenly Father does. And so Moses was prepared in the palace. And if you'll find yourself right now in a place that you don't think is ideal for you, here's what you should remember. As it says in the book of James, humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up. Humble yourself. Just wait. Give yourself in the ways that you should, and in due course, you will find that everything will come together. Final lesson. One more. This one's a brief one. Our gifts are not the main part of the story. Our gifts are not the main part of the story. There's a whole load of other things going on in this chapter. I'm just going to single out one other. But it's more important than what we've talked about so far. And it is the fact that God saves Moses from death. And he saves him from drowning in the river. And then he gets taken into Pharaoh's household where he gets adopted and all the provision of the king is given to Moses. It's a reminder. It's a pointer to what God has done for us. And for each of us, we had death working in us. We were facing death and yet God has rescued us. And the New Testament writers describe it like this, that we're now in his household. And we're told we have every one of his resources at our disposal. So much so that when you pray, you should know that God can do more than you can ask or even imagine. That's just how much he has available. And so just as Moses was put in Pharaoh's household, so we have been put in God's household. In other words, the reminder is this. There's a greater power at work in this story. And he is the giver of the gift. And my encouragement to you is while gifts matter, there's something that matters all the more, and that's the giver. Love the giver, not the gifts. In fact, if you'll love the giver, you'll find that your gifts will flourish all the more. The more that you love the giver of the gifts, the more you'll find yourself able and focused and empowered to be able to use them
in the right ways.
So I want to encourage you that though you're to take care of your gifts and though you're to patiently wait as they are prepared within you, that we never forget that actually the giver matters all the more than the gifts. Maybe the worship band could come back, please. And John and Carol have already mentioned a man this afternoon who I want to just tell you about briefly now. I had no idea that they would meet him, but he's John and Carol's old senior pastor and my old mentor, a friend of ours called Steve Nicholson. There's Steve. Well, Steve used to say this. Steve would say that he wanted to live an inexplicable life. And here's what he meant. Steve meant that he wanted people to say of him, how is it that Steve gets to do all these things? He's not smart enough to do these things. He's not good looking enough to do these things. He's not gregarious enough. Steve's definition of a party is him and one other person. He's not gregarious enough to do these things, and he's not eloquent enough to do these things. He said, I want people to say that about me, and I want to be able to say to them, there's a greater power at work. And that's the sort of life that I want to invite you to live today. The inexplicable life, the life which points to a greater power at work, the life which works by learning to use the gifts that God has given us, but making sure that he matters more than the gifts. Let's stand together, shall we? In a minute, we're going to sing. And my encouragement is to use this song as a prayer, as a way of saying, I want you to use, here's my gifts, and I want you to use them. But one of the verses that we read part of earlier refers to the fact that gifts are given through the laying on of hands sometimes. That's one of the ways in which they're given. And there's going to be, as Andy mentioned earlier, a prayer team here at the end. Listen, if there's gifts that you particularly want, or you want to particularly grow in this afternoon, you may want to take this opportunity to have the laying on of hands of people praying for you and putting their hands on your shoulder and asking for those gifts. I want to encourage you, if as I've been speaking this afternoon, you've been thinking, man, I really want that gift, or I want to learn how I can use that gift, or maybe there's a little bit of this gift, but I'd like to grow in it. I want to encourage you, make the most of the prayer team at the end. Come and get one of them to lay their hands on you and pray that God's gifts will increase in your life. Let's sing, shall we? And then we'll just come back and pray before we close.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.